So the situation was that we were focusing now on a special kind of grammars, in particular LRK grammars. And these, a grammar would be an LRK grammar if you take a look at all the rightmost derivations that are possible in that particular grammar. And in case you encounter a certain step in that in that derivation, specifically the one where you perform just a step, then you would compare two of these steps, which have a few things in common. Mainly, there's in these rightmost derivations there is a part which you have already expanded to all the terminals. This is the one that is marked blue here. That's the W and X part here in there. And LRK grammars are grammars where when you just consider the first K symbols of said fraction which is already expanded to the terminals, if you just take the first K symbols from that and then consider the derivations which for the suffix part are look the same, and if you can find several different ways to reach this same sentence form while going different routes, for example, through a sentence form alpha A and alpha prime A prime, and still end up with the same sentence form in the end, then you were able to take two paths which could not be disambiguated with just looking at the first K symbols of the parts of the input that follows after the follow after this ambiguous path. So these are the ones that would be unsuited for LRK, thus would not be LRK grammars. However, in the case that you have an LRK grammar, you could say that in case you look at these situations, you can always say that the green parts are not considered to be different, but must be always matching. And consequently, you would also get the already matched part would be the same. So in LRK grammars, you don't run into ambiguous paths if you try to reach a certain sentence form of your rightmost derivation. You can use that to generate a... Oh, I should have connected this one. You can use that to create a test for whether a grammar is suited for LRK or not. And the test is like this. You focus, first of all, on all possible rightmost derivations. So you try to perform these rightmost derivations, and if you do so, you just enumerate all of them and underline in your sentence form the part of the sentence form that was replaced in the last step of your derivations. So because there was the grammar X goes to beta applied in the last step, What you do is, in the last step, you underline your better part in order to just mark what the last replacement of that thing has been. If you are at that point, you focus on the prefix of this sentence form, which is called the handle. That is what you would find on the push down of your automaton. So you focus on the alpha beta part. And what you now do is you compare all of the derivations that you have found. And in case you find that you find two of these sentence forms, where if you just focus on the alpha and beta part, if one of these sentence forms, alpha beta, is a prefix of another's alpha beta, then you can imagine this is what what on the push down of your parser happens. As soon as you read this handle, you now need to decide whether to shift, which would follow the longer of the two alpha betas, or whether you would like to reduce, which would be choosing the shorter of the two handles, and to follow the beta from there. And in that case, you need to somehow differentiate which of those you would assume to be present. And that is what you do with your look ahead now. And now you look at not only at the handles, but at the complete sentence form, and take the first, or try to determine a minimal k within the W part in here that suffices to disambiguate these two alternatives. In case you can find a finite k to do so, you're good, and you take the minimal k that you find for that as the k that is necessary to disambiguate these two cases. You repeat until you have found all the pairs that do a prefix match, and you take from these minimal things, you take the maximum k. And that is the k that needs to be used for look ahead in an LRK parser for that grammar. Okay, that was a pretty lengthy strategy. Let's try it out a little bit. Maybe it gets clearer by example. So let's start with, of course, a small grammar. I should probably say that the strategy that you've seen here, of course, when I say you try to match all the possible sentence forms that you can derive via rightmost derivation, then this soon gets out of hand by just sheer amount of possible derivations of your grammar rules. So that's a proceeding that's suitable just for very small grammars and for just these showcases that we give you here, or maybe in exercises or exam assignments or something. If you do that on a real production grammar, you would resort to other means. In detail, you would just try to generate an LRK parser. If you fail with your current K, you would just try with a larger K, and so on. And if not, well, then you can succeed with that. Anyway, so let's have a look at that specific example. The strategy is now to enumerate right recursions of that thing. So, what would be possible right derivations? Well, you could, for example, go S goes to A. Then A, no, that's probably, yellow is not good for that. Then A would be a sentence form which could be produced via rightmost derivation. And since A was the right-hand side of the last rule that I applied, I also underline it. Okay? Next possible thing is, well, starting from A, I'm also able to produce B with the rightmost derivation, so I can also get B, and B was the right-hand side belonging to the last rule that I applied, so like this. Then, of course, A and B's are non-terminals, so I can go even another derivation further. I don't have to care about staying rightmost or leftmost because, well, it's just one non-terminal there, so I can just continue, and I would continue with, for example, deriving a B from that while underlining this thing. I can also go... Oh, no. I can also go another round of deriving from A, or expanding A, and that would go like A, B, B, while still underlining this part. And I can go on like this. I can once again do it like this until, well, in the end, I will end up with something like A to the K, A, B, B to the K, while still underlining this part. Okay? And, yeah, of course, I can also find that all of these things, well, for all of these, I could also have gone the way to generate zero, so, yeah, also zero and AK, BK would have been... a viable path in that derivation step thing. And also I can do so for the B part, and for B I get A, B, B, B with the whole thing underlined. I can go A, A, B, 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 B with that part underlined, so in the end I will get something like A to the K, A, B, B square, B to, B to the 2K. And same as before, I can also obtain, in this case, one like that. And of course I need to underline that part, and also no, that was too far. That part. So this is now an enumeration of all the possible sentence forms that I get while doing rightmost derivations for that grammar. I've done that now in very, very detailed way. Of course, I can collapse that also into smaller fractions by just going directly to this part over here and this part over here. But for now, what do I do now with that? Now I have to focus on just the alpha beta part of this whole thing. The alpha part is meant to be the part that is, no, let's maybe start with the beta part. The beta part is the part that is the underlined one, so that is always beta in our case. And alpha is everything that comes before, so that's, for example, this thing, and here it's even empty, here it's also empty, there's this thing, and this thing, and this thing. So, okay, now I have to check whether I can find, there's also, well, these were just intermediate steps. I have summarized everything with a K already, so I can just get rid of those. So now I have to check for whether one of my A, B, alpha betas is a prefix of another alpha beta. I can do so by having a look at. Oh, also I think I missed this thing, but just doesn't matter. So I think there's no candidate which could be would match an epsilon A. So that's good. There's no candidate which would somehow be prefix comparable to just this, so that's fine. Now let's start with let's continue with the next thing. There's a to the k, aab. Is there something that is I just see that's also wrong. Nobody corrected me in that. Like this. So, is there anything that a to the k aab could be a prefix of? Well, there's the only thing that could somehow be similar to a prefix is the thing over here, which also starts with a to the k a, but it then continues with b, and here it continues with a. So there's just none is the prefix of the other. So they are fine, and also the 0 and the 1 are just, at some point then different to the other thing, so none is a prefix of the other. So in all cases, we can say there's the alpha beta strings are prefix free in our, all our sentence forms that are right derivable. So we didn't even need to consider anything from the input. Any prefix from input would be that part here, but we didn't even need that part to differentiate all these situations. So in that case, we didn't have to have any look ahead at all. So that is just the same thing that we did by hand right now in a more compact way. There's all the rightmost derivations enlisted here. I've also chopped all the blue parts away, which would be this W part. And, well, we see that all these things are not prefixes of the others, so we don't need a look ahead. And we can say an LR0 parser, which would be just a canonical parser as we have used it so far, would be sufficient for that type of grammar to parse. But, well, let's go on to another example, which is not so easily decidable anymore. So, even simpler, just two productions. And, well, we can once again generate the right-hand side forms. So there's AAC. You can then have AC must be all the time, but you can have ABB, AABB, BB, C. So you always have these pairs of things. And you have to underline the parts that have been here. So it's this, and in this case it's this, and this goes on until we reach a point where it's like that. And also at some point B could be just replaced for A, so the last one would be A B to the 2K C and particular B like that. So that's all the sentence forms, am I right? Okay. So it's well like that. Now is there any prefixing going on? Well, Obviously, as I have enlisted only the parts with no right-hand side, well, that's already an indication that I didn't see any prefixes in there. And I think, do you spot any prefixes? I also don't. So, yeah, that thing is also LR0. How disappointing. Let's do another one. So now I've changed the second production a little bit to now have the A in a right recursive way. And this time, at least I hope so, that there's now a situation where I have to apply look ahead. So it's this thing. Then there's A, B square A. With that here, then we of course also have a b to the 2k b square a. That is always thing, and then we have a to 2k and B, I think. So, anything that you see that matches one prefix of an alphabet string with another?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in this case, it's quite clear. This thing is exactly a prefix of, well, in this case, this one, for example. But also there would be others that you could construct by just getting rid of this and matching with this one, for example. So yeah, there's several conflicts over there. So how can you tell whether to interpret that as the second alternative for A, and when can you and reduce, and when to interpret that you have to shift another thing on the input? Well, for that you need to probably look a little bit more into the input, and in case, well, that you find, for example, another B in the input, you could already say, well, that's not the place to reduce, but maybe you're in that production or in that production somehow. So you probably, it was not a good idea to do a compact version of that thing. I should have like this. And for example, if you have A and B, you could already disambiguate that from this one here by just having another look into the input. Just one symbol already is sufficient if there's not the end of the input already reached, but instead if there is another B, for example, you would rather shift than reduce at that position, because you would think that this would belong to the first alternative for A. Yes, please?
And wouldn't there be a C instead of input?
Oh, of course, I forgot the C. Thank you very much. So, yeah. End of input doesn't change too much, because that can also be interpreted as another symbol. But you're right in that case, and probably that's the cause why I also added the S goes to a C thing in order to have an input to talk about. And with just considering the next input, which is a C, would tell us, well, with just a look ahead of one, I can see if there's a C, I have to interpret the B as completed, and I have to reduce. And in case that there's no C, I have to still shift and continue my thing. So with an input of 1, I can already decide to disambiguate those things. And yeah, of course, also the case where I conflict with a bee that is still from somewhere inside here. I also can say if I have a C, I have to in my look ahead, I have to reduce. In case I don't have a C, well, I probably just continue shifting and see whether it works out to be one of either of these. So that would be the way to interpret that thing. So, yeah, to make it a little bit shorter, that is the compact version of all the things that can be yielded with just a look ahead of one. And this look ahead of one already enables us to determine, to disambiguate these partners. Okay. So we say that it's not sufficient to just rely on the alpha beta string part of my sentence form, but I have to look at the next symbol. So in that case, I will be LR1 with my grammar. And there's even one grammar more. So we have S goes to AAC, A goes to BAB and B. And to make life a little bit shorter, I will just show you one of the derivation steps that's in there. And for example, what I can get is a situation where I just, well, I start with my A and my C. This is begin and end markers. And there's, apart from that, there's BAB, which will yield B to the N, A, B to the N, and at some point I will try to terminate my whole thing with another B. And that is that situation here where I have marked the handle already like this. And yeah, now I would have to differentiate whether to with other derivations where I, for example, have something like that, but with a different n, something else, an m, for example, which would be clearly or way larger than the n. In that case, I would obtain the same string as this one, and by just pumping my n and m in well arbitrary way, I can exceed once again every constant that I choose for looking ahead into that part of the thing, but just looking at derivations that have a lot of iterations of the A goes to BAB production. So that would be a typical example where I just can't fix a K of the input window that will make it possible for me to differentiate between the two sentence forms. Okay? Good. So that's all, also pretty similar to the things that you might remember from theoretical computer science, where you had languages which had, had opening and closing brackets, and there were languages that had a marker symbol in the middle where you would know when, or well, you would also have different symbols for closing and opening, but you just can't determine whether you have an even number of elements. That's exactly that case here. You can't decide whether you have an uneven number of B's in that case. That's not something that you can do with a deterministic parser. Okay, so you can't find a finite K for these cases. So that's the way that you would test for LRK properties here. Is there a question for this proceeding? Well, that's a premiere. Okay, good. So that's nice that you have understood all that, so we can use that in assignments now. Okay, for practical use in a parser generator now, LR1 parsing. What's that about? The idea is now to use another symbol of the input, which is to the right of the things that I actually want to or try to reduce, as a hint whether I should actually perform a reduction or whether I should still continue with shifting, or even the symbol also might help me in deciding which right-hand side I should use to reduce my top of the pushdown. And for that, the idea is now to go a similar way as we have done for the LR0 approach. If you think back, what we did was we came up with a finite automaton that would have our pushdown content as an input, and we created that by having a look at the possible expansions from our root node and tried to see whether the history that we can read from the pushdown of our shift-reduce parser would make sense when trying to expand. For our approach now, we would do something related. We would also have a look at expansions that are possible with our grammar. But what we want to keep in mind is what we can do as expansions in case that I have a certain context of the symbol that I try to expand, in the sense that I have a certain sentence form that has so far been expanded or derived from an input, then I choose to derive even more from that sentence form. But although I'm deriving that part, I also take a look at what comes next to the symbol that I want to derive, and I remember that and take that with me in my considerations of how to interpret the input. And the thing how I can do that is that I now don't keep book of plain LR items as we have done before, in the sense of an item is a production rule with just a marker placed somewhere. But also, well, that's still part of what I consider an item for an LR1 automaton. But what I also take with me is information about the context under which I have come to that particular grammar rule and that particular marker in there, by carrying with me the right context of where I last expanded. And that will be, in the end, will be my look-ahead information that I use to decide whether that is the item that is applicable for that situation in the pushdown input comparison thing later on. So LR1 item is now a pair of a grammar rule with a marker and a look-ahead symbol. And the look-ahead symbol is the one that I take from all the locations that I can reach via derivations of my root symbol, where I have somehow reached my symbol B. And this X is now the first symbol of everything that appears after the B. So it's the right context of the non-terminal that I considered ripe for expansion. This will have certain consequences on, well, that's how I interpret the whole thing. Such an item now I consider as admissible for a certain pushdown content. This gamma alpha is the thing that I find on my pushdown during shift-reduce parsing, which means that's the parts of the input that I have somehow already reduced to a certain point. And same as this thing. And if my new canonical automaton now is at some point has this item in its state, then this must mean that it is possible to derive from S while producing these intermediate things, gamma 0 to gamma m, and reach B such that the next thing that comes right of the B would start with an X. And I can create an automaton that gives me items like that. Once again, by just looking at the grammar rules, but now also taking into account that the first symbol of certain parts of that play a certain role. So let's take a look at what a characteristic automaton now looks like. My states are now sets of LR1 items. The start state is similar to the one from the LR0 automaton. It's that artificial S prime goes to S with the marker in front of the S. But now I say, well, S prime, that is our artificial starting rule that we always add in order to make our entry point into the system unique. And in the case that I expand like that, I know that I don't expect anything else to come to be in the input anymore. Or, well, I expect nothing to be produced right now, which would be to the right of the S. So I just take some kind of terminator symbol, which would be end of file, or in our case, I baptize the thing as epsilon. Yeah, but that means here my input is done, is already finished. I also have final states in my LR1 automaton. Final states are like this. I have an item, LR0 item part of my item, which is this one, which needs to be closed, which means that the marker needs to be to the left of my right-hand side. Yeah, and X must be some symbol from follow, so there's no condition on X for a final state. Now, let's have a look at how transitions are made up from, because that is the thing where the difference to the LR0 automaton construction actually really comes from. So first of all, what we have is we have situations where I assume that I start from an item where the marker is in front of some symbol X, and my so far gathered right context is this small x. Then shifting another symbol, large X, doesn't change anything on the information under which context I came to my specific item. So what I do is the only thing that I change is I move the bullet to the right of the consumed symbol and leave the context information the same. So that's the easy part. The shift transition is still, well, it's not a shift transition, but yeah, this transition that consumes, that's pretty easy. The one that's a little bit more work to do is the other one where I expand my non-terminal. So that is this one here. That is what I do from when I start from an item where the marker is in front of a non-terminal. In that case, I must consider that in principle I could have expanded in a top-down coming parse tree, and then what I would have done is I would have created a transition to a new, freshly opened item with the marker on the very left-hand side. But now I have to determine what I put as right context of that newly opened item. And now I can't just stupidly copy the old write context, which was this old X over here. Where's my? I can't just copy that X because, well, I actually expanded over here, and there might still be something here that is actually directly to the right of the B instead of the X. So the blue X is not the right context of an expansion with B in that case, but instead there might be a better, which might be not the empty string but something larger, and in that case I have a new context under which I expand it. So what I have to do is I have to in case that I do a transition to B goes to bullet gamma, I have to take a look at what directly comes right to the B where I came from and concatenate that to my original right context, which was the blue X. And I must do that in a way that conforms to the amount of look ahead that I originally installed for my parsing principle here. And so what I do is I do in our case a one concatenation with the look ahead that we have carried with us so far, and the resulting thing is the thing that will go in there. So the whole automaton just works like the old characteristic automaton for LR0, but in our case what we do is we carry over the right context of the symbols that we have conceptually expanded. So, yes, please? You always have to keep in mind that we're talking about two automata. There's you get it? But it's not a surprising question. That is a thing that buggers most people when they first hear these things. There's pushdown automaton, and there's the finite automaton. The pushdown automaton only accepts terminal symbols. The finite automaton is a helper thing that runs on the pushdown content, and the pushdown content has non-terminal symbols due to the fact that it does replacements of right-hand sides. So the characteristic automaton needs to read non-terminals too. Okay, good. So once again, we know now what to do. We can perform our deterministic or our transformation of a non-deterministic automaton into a deterministic automaton. Man, all these words. Yeah, and we can do the construction of the whole thing also in one go, as we have for the LR0 automaton too. The only thing is that the only thing that changes is the part where I conceptually expand my items. And you remember last time we had this epsilon closure. The epsilon closure was the thing where we started from an item where the marker was in front of a non-terminal, and we added all the fresh open items that came from the bullet in front of non-terminals, and that was a thing that cascaded, and we expanded the whole thing until the system stabilized. That was our epsilon closure last time when we did the LR0 construction. Now that we have the LR1 construction, remember for the transitions from last page, we've seen that in the case where we did the expansion, which was this thing here, we had to do more than before. We had to do these computations. So these are the computations that go now into the closure operation for the direct LR1 construction. So what we need to do here now is that in case that we want to expand a certain non-terminal, what we need to do is we in the closure we not only need to determine the right fresh item for that, but we also need to pay attention to the actual x that we put in there, and we have to compute this x by looking at the right context of the original expanded non-terminal, which means that we have to look at this beta prime, and so that goes in there. We have to have a look at the old right context, which was that thing, which also goes in there, and this beta was something that we expanded, and I add a C whenever I can at some point reach some C from starting from that B, and in order is that really correct like that? I think it's not even. I think the definition is not correct here. See, the problem is that right here I have marked my beta as being something that I have to incorporate in my first computations, but that's not the case because it is. Ah, sorry, it's correct. It's everything's fine. things I might reach some C. C is the beginning of any right hand side that is reachable by expanding from B. And what I do is I don't add that thing as I have thought in the beginning, but instead what I add is the expansion of C, which is that thing. So having the right context of C is a good thing, and that's why the B also goes in the beta also goes in the determination of the X. Yeah. So all in all, what you need to take from that is that as soon as I have the marker in front of a non-terminal, this non-terminal can be expanded into a lot of other right-hand sides. And I take a look at all of them. And in case that any of them start with a non-terminal again, I also put the particular productions that belong to that non-terminal into my newly created set. And I also need to come up with a look-ahead set, and I compute that by looking at different components and building the first symbols from that. And I take as a source for my first symbols, for once, everything that comes to the right of the particular non-terminal in the yield of the B, then the right context of the B, and also the right context of the production that I came from. Okay, and with that, I can pretty much just take the construction that I had from LR0 and do the same. I just have to somehow modify the closure function to perform the appropriate context computation. Also, what I need to do is Yeah, in case that I, yeah, it's just performing the closures there, and if I do a shift, all I need to do is just copy my write context information from the original thing to the new thing. Okay. That's probably a little bit abstract. Let's maybe try to do that in a real environment with a real example. So that is the thing that you've seen for the LR0 automaton also. But now our goal is because, well, we've seen that in the LR0 case, we still had conflicts in the resulting automaton. Let's have a try whether LR1 parsing might be something that's sufficient for our purposes. So what do I have to do? I have already sketched what our results for LR0 gave us. That is the part with the grammars and the bullets in there. The question is now, how do look-aheads look like? And for that, I have to start with the start state, that is Q0. And for that, I know definitely that that's just the end of file coming there. So it's epsilon that I have as write context for that particular item. So now, what the closure gave us, at least for the part of the productions with the markers, was that as soon as I have my marker in front of a non-terminal, like it is the case here, I have to add all fresh items that are spawned with that non-terminal. So I have to add that right-hand side and that right-hand side. So that's what I did here, here, and here. But now it turns out that I also have my bullet in front of T, so I have to add these two right-hand sides, which I did here and here. There's the marker in front of the F, so I have to check that both of these right-hand sides are somehow present in my closure. So what I do is I add them here, and now I have my marker in front of a bracket. That's fine. Brackets don't expand. Same as a terminal int. Terminal int also doesn't expand, and I'm done with the part of just the expansions. Now what I have to do is I have to somehow determine the look-ahead symbols. So what I do here is let's compute the things. Here my expansion was from that thing over here. I expanded the E in the very first production, and now I have to somehow memorize the right context that I had. After the E, the right-hand side is terminated, so there is no direct right context for my expansion here. So what I have to do now is I have to take the right context of the complete production as my right context, because there's nothing else that I need to consider in between. So all of these expansions have been done. Well, all of the E expansions were valid under the end of file context. Am I done yet? No, I still have to consider all the other bullets in there, whether they contribute other context information. For example, I have to look at, and now it's a little bit messy because it's so small here, I have to look at this E, for example. This E is something that will also, when we were just expanding rules, we didn't get any more information by that because we already added all the things for all the expansions for E. When we're after the right contexts, however, we now have new information to consider from that thing, because here E can be expanded not from an empty right-hand side context, but instead from the context of plus here. So with that, I have to add the plus symbol to all the productions that are expandable from E. So that's this one and this one. So I have to add plus for each of them. Okay. Then there is the next thing that I need to consider. That is the T over here. Here we have no right-hand side context for the T. So all the T productions, this one and this one, oh, wrong color, but anyway, all get the direct thing from over here as their right context. So I have to put epsilon and plus in there, and also this one, epsilon and plus. However, we can also find that it's really messy now. That T is also expandable from a context where we have the multiplication operator as right context. So all the items that have T as a left-hand side symbol now have to be assumed to maybe also be produced with the multiplication operator as right-hand side. Good. And so on. Then there's also the F as expandable symbol. So what I do is I take my right-hand side from the production where F is expandable and copy that to everything there, so plus times, and also there's another F, epsilon plus times, all that. And now I have only terminal symbols right next to the bullets that remain, and those are things that don't expand anymore, so there's nothing contributing anymore to my things. Okay? Good. So the next thing is that there's also, of course, the transitions under symbols. You still remember we have transitions of our finite automaton under terminal symbols, like this. No, like this one. And under non-terminal symbols like this one. And you might wonder how the look-ahead symbols behave under these things, but if you think back to the construction rules, if you just do plain transitions, well, you can just copy the look-ahead symbols that you have computed so far. So for the F part, for example, you would have a transition from Q0 under F. And which are those? Well, there's only one particular item where the bullet is in front of F, and it's this one here. And, well, maybe I remove the old thing. So it's this thing. So what I have to do is I have to copy the look ahead from here to here. So that is everything that I need to do for my transitions. Same goes for this thing Same goes for this one. What I do is I need to just copy the look ahead over here. And since I have now removed all my look ahead, I will just add them with prepared slide. So these things directly go here, same as these things directly go here. So there's no modifications done. It's just copying of the look ahead symbols. What is slightly more interesting is what happens when you hit another state where you have the marker once again in front of a non-terminal. That is what happens in this case here. If you do a transition with opening bracket, you will end up with, at first, just this production here. So the first thing what you do is you just copy the look ahead, and then you repeat the same procedure as we have done for the first state. So you perform your creation of the closure on the item part, and also you perform your propagation of look ahead symbols, same way as you did before. But this time you don't start with just the end of file symbol, but now you have more symbols to inherit to your related item. So what you will get there is that just in the beginning you will have E expands to this and this, so both of them will inherit epsilon plus n times, and only now you continue with checking. Well, there's another E, for example, here opening up a context of plus, so I have to add plus to all the contexts of productions that start with E. However, I have plus already in there, so fine, that's already good. And you can continue with T. T will also have all the right contexts of its parents' production, and this will lead to the propagation of all these things. Oh, turns out I already did the first mistake in there. Do you spot it? Yes? Yeah. So, shame on me. Maybe it's because everything's so small here. The closing bracket is changing the deal here for us. In what way? Well, when there would have been no symbol there, I could have just copied the look ahead from my parent each time that I expanded. However, in our case here, the symbol which I expanded was to the left of another thing. And for that, I need to consider the first symbol before I consider its right-hand side context. So what I would have needed to do is instead, it's still epsilon plus and times in the beginning, but now for E, I would have instead add the bracket first, and now looking at the E also adds a plus symbol over here, and now I have T and I copy the bracket and the plus symbol and get the times bracket, times, and here, well, that continues on. So in the end I end up with the closing bracket in all of my look-ahead sets. Sorry, that is not a good sign when I also do the algorithm wrong. But anyway, that is the way you perform all these computations. Also, try to make sure that when you perform these expansions, that in case you forgot to add another production at some point and somehow screw up the sequence in there, you might end up with something at the bottom changing something which came way earlier. For example, it's not a situation over here, but in another context, you might change a look ahead of something over here. And if you get that situation, you have to re-evaluate every other thing that is dependent from that. So it's a kind of a fixed point computations that you have to do there. So make sure to get that right. We will have tutorial sheets on that, and you have the chance to compute a few of these things. But make sure that you pay attention to whenever you get new results for look ahead at a certain point where you have the bullet in front of something that you have added somewhere way up. You might have to recompute a lot of the other look-ahead sets. So be careful to check whether that is a symbol that has already been added there. If not, then please reconsider all the dependent items. Okay. So if you do so, you end up with a lot of items, a lot of states. And if you counted the last time, we had two screens of states for our LR0 automaton. For the LR1 automaton, we have three screens now, which should also already give you an impression that the automaton that we have created here is not the one from LR0, that is the one from LR0, but instead it is larger than that. It's an extension to the LR0 automaton. So you get way more states into the LR1 automaton than in the LR0 automaton. Okay. However, we have now more information to our for our pleasure here. We can now have a look at the states which were conflicting in the LR0 automaton, which were the states Q1, Q2, and Q9, and have a look at how our additional information now has an influence on the actual conflict. So let's have a look at our new Q9. So it's still the same LR0 core. LR0 core is just the items part, which has just the LR0 items, meaning just the grammar and the marker. So that is still the same. The core is still the same as the LR0's state. However, we now have additional information which is over there, and that might help us now in deciding how to actually interpret certain pushdown and input situations, certain computation states. Well, and what you can say is that in case that reading your pushdown ends up with your LR1 automaton in state Q9, in principle, it would have come to a conflict with LR0. However, LR1 says, wait, we still need to check our look ahead. You still need to have a sneak peek into the input. And we can now differentiate. The state that would have said continue with shift has a star symbol right next to the marker. And the reduce symbol, well, of course, it has the reduce item, of course, is a closed item. It has nothing right next to our marker. However, we have computed the right context of that production. So that is something that we can read from over here. So the first item is the one that is relevant in case that our look ahead would either be the end of the file or a plus. And the second item would be the one that is relevant then when in the input we find the star symbol. So in case that the look ahead of a closed item is disjunct from the symbol that is right next to the bullet, then we can differentiate these two things, and we say that in that case there's no conflict because we can decide which of the two is relevant. So in case that I have an earlier on conflicting state, and I can say that all the look ahead or write contexts of closed items are disjunct, or in case of a shift reduce conflict, the following symbol is disjunct from the look ahead of a closed symbol, then that is not a conflict anymore. So in case that they are disjunct, conflicts are resolved in the other one automaton. And it turns out, well, we can hardwire that into our parser implementation. So that is the driver that interprets the tables that we compute in our automaton constructions. We have now two tables in our LR1 parser. There's the go-to table, which is the ordinary transition function of the LR1 shift reduce parser. And then there's a new thing, which is the action table, and that is the table where I can look up what I should do with my current state in case that I have that particular input. So that is a table that maps the combination of input and parser state to an action, and this action can either be do a reduce or do a shift. So that is the action table is the part of the parser that disambiguates between possible conflicts in the states that I get into via my go-to table. So I can construct an LR1 parser from that. That's the parser does evaluate the go-to table in order to compute new states depending from old states and reading input symbols. And what it does is it pushes the newly computed state onto its stack. And in case that the top of the stack contains a complete item and the action table for that top of the stack item, together with a sneak peek into my remaining input of the width, well, in our case one, says, well, we need to do a reduce. Then what it does is it removes the a certain number of states from the input, which should be as long as the right-hand side of the production has been, and replace it with the thing that it gets from consuming an A with the state that we had before we pushed all the intermediate states of the thing. So what you see in that construction here is that we have in that construction already switched over to this computational efficient representation of a shift-reduced parser, which pushes the states of the canonical automaton onto its pushdown, and instead of the plain symbols from the input, which saves us a lot of re-evaluation time, because well, what we do is essentially we just push all the complete trace that we've done through our canonical automaton and backtrack to a situation where we can, instead of having to read the complete right-hand side of a production, instead we can just read the left-hand side and see what comes after that. Okay, and the finishing state is of course the one where we have consumed all the input, and in that case what we can do is we go over to the final state in case that we have our marker production in a complete state. So that is now the LR1 parser. That is an example for an action table where you see the action table tells us for each of the states that that might be a conflicting state. For example, the Q9 was one of these. It tells us what to do in case that we hit, for example, a closing bracket. What we need to do is we need to do a reduction with the zeroth alternative of E. When we hit a plus, we also do the zeroth alternative for E. But in case that we hit a star, what we will essentially do is we will do a shift. So that is the table that helps us in figuring out what to do in possibly conflicting states, in case that the look ahead helps us there. And yeah, so we end up with with the thing that there might also be situations that the look ahead was not large enough for our purposes, and we still run into a conflict that will happen, for example, when we have a state that has two complete items with exactly the same right-hand side context. In these cases, we still have a reduce-reduce conflict, and also there might be shift-reduce conflicts in case that we have a completed item and a non-completed item with, and now that's important, with a terminal symbol over there. Non-terminals can't ever be yield a shift-reduce conflict because with a non-terminal that can't be associated with a shift. So that's not a real conflict of this. But if we have a terminal symbol over here, and this terminal symbol is actually it's a matter of definitions, but in principle if the symbol that you find over there is part of the look ahead of the complete item, of the complete LR1 item, then we don't know what to do here. The thing is that I think in the constructions I have not separated all the items and their right hand sides, but I have merged all the right-hand sides into one, which is essentially the same. Instead of enlisting all the LR1 items with different right context, I joined them if they had the same LR0 part and just put a list of their right context over there. So, yeah, that's why this confusion is over here. But essentially, if there is a right context which matches the terminal that is to the right of the marker, then we have a shift-reduce conflict nevertheless. So that would be states which would make the automaton unsuited for LR1 parsing, and all we can do then is somehow either increase the look ahead or rewrite our grammar in an appropriate way. But there's also the same notion for LRK. In that case, we would also have to consider a further right-hand side context of the whole thing, but yeah, that doesn't matter for our purposes too much. It's just for completeness. So, in practice, LRK parsers are out there. For example, the Yak and Bison parsers are quite famous for C programming. There's JBison and JYak and, of course, CUP as LRK parsers for the Java world, which we will probably use in our mini projects. And, there's the thing that the LRK is a construction that, in case that the grammars grow quite large, for example, for the PHP grammar or for the Java grammar or anything like that, you've got several hundreds, if not thousands, of productions, and for that you might run into performance problems with just plain LRK parsing, because there's a state explosion happening on the in this epsilon closure, and especially if you have to enlarge the look ahead of your parsing principle, you will run in a lot of different write context possibilities, and that will even more explode your state expansions. And yeah, this leads to the situation that the practical parser generators are not about increasing the look ahead, but in simplifying the and shrinking the state space of an LRK automaton. For that, there's a special purpose constructions like the simple LRK and also the LALRK, and they basically work by kind of joining look ahead sets between different items, partly even between different states, partly depending on the state, but that's special cases that I won't cover in the lecture directly. So, to round up the parser part, we've seen a lot of principles for parsing. There's we've seen the regular languages with the regex to NFA to DFA DFA constructions. There's LL1 and up to LLK parsers, which are always a larger class of languages and containing each other. There's something that I haven't put on there, which is LR with a look ahead of not a fixed number of symbols, but instead you can also perform the look ahead in terms of a deterministic automaton or reg expression, and that's something that kind of goes out of the of this clear hierarchy that we have over here. Then we have heard about LR0, which is covering everything that regular languages can, also parts of what LL1 to LLK can do, but there's also LLK grammars that are not LR0 grammars. Then there's the special purpose LR grammars with SLR and LALR, which we haven't covered so far. And then there's also the LR parser with look ahead. And it turns out for that we don't have separate classes anymore. Each language that we can recognize with an LRK parser, we can also recognize with an LR1 parser. However, we might have to rewrite the grammar appropriately. So, yeah, that's kind of the wrap up to the thing, to the whole hierarchy here. And yeah, to give you an impression of what we have done so far and what you should take away from that is we've talked about lexical and syntactical analysis, which were generator based approaches. We have generated deterministic automata from regular expressions. We have generated special pushdown automata from grammars. We have had special constructions for regular expressions to finite automata with Barry-Sethi and the power set construction. We went from finite automata to scanners by doing the by need construction of the deterministic automaton and the longest match algorithm. We had a look at syntactical analysis by learning how to compute look-ahead sets in terms of first one sets and follow one sets. We have talked about top-down parsing with the LL1 parser, which started from the item pushdown automaton and ended up in LLK parsing. Then we had the bottom-up approach, where we talked about this shift-reduce parser, which had a canonical automaton piggybacking on its pushdown and giving advice to when to reduce, leading to an LRK parser, and that's already all. So now we've reached the...